Well, it is that time of the month again when the Bob Davis podcast runs down the battleground state political polls. I've been doing this at the end of every month, and I'll be doing it until election. And the idea was I was going to do this on the deck in a more relaxed way because it is Friday. But it's way too windy, so I'm out the driveway in mobile podcast command. Got both doors open because I think we're going to have a storm. Maybe not. So we'll get to see it roll in. And I got the door open, so I hope nobody pulls into the driveway and bothers me at this point. So they may or may not. But because the door is hanging open in the driveway. Anyway, I don't seek to answer the dumbest question in politics, which is who's going to win. I do not want to convince you of anything one way or another. Don't want to read into the polls things that aren't there or, quote, national polls. I will not give you odds, chances, or in any other way predict an outcome. And I haven't in these poll podcasts. A political poll is nothing more than market research on political candidates, just like they do market research on Walmart versus Target, Ford versus Chevy, or a PC versus a Mac. Like insects, the actual political season for a presidential election has a short life. It's volatile and therefore hard to predict. It's dependent on the environment, that is, day-to-day developments on the economic, international, and domestic fronts, you know, gaffes, events, debates, things like that. Sometimes things that happen will not show up in the poll as it is. No one knows why. I think the easiest explanation is we're in an environment now where we have a series of very quick one-day stories, and so the effect of those one-day stories may or may not build up, and I'm going to come back to that at the end of the podcast. Even sophisticated statistical analysis of all kinds of raw data from data mining, social media, and so on requires someone who can interpret what it is. And I will tell you a quick story, and this is probably going to be a long podcast because I tend to break out into stories with this. But, you know, if you have somebody that uses something like factor analysis on the responses in a survey, which you can do, or on raw data from data mining, if they don't have experience and if they don't have the right kind of experience, then their interpretation of what they see in the factor analysis can be junk or it can be valuable. And I've seen very experienced researchers, you know, and statistical analyzers run data and not understand the business that they're doing research on, and provide data that doesn't make any sense. And I've said so in meetings. So that's useless data that you've just shown me there, because it doesn't say, you know, whatever. So I've seen it. I've seen factor analysis and sophisticated types of statistical analysis, which you can run on data, which shows the relationship between data sets that you don't see in raw percentages. And there's a lot of talk about that these days, and has been, because we have all this data that we can run statistics on and we can get numbers, but you have to understand what they mean. And so you have to apply data sets to the world as a whole. So as a result, even sophisticated research in politics is an art, not a science. And it is most definitely an art that most commentators and most television personalities have no concept of. And so what they're doing is either interviewing somebody or they're reading what someone else wrote. So remember, it's a science, but it's the littlest science. It is not nuclear physics. In other words, you're going to get a certain result when you do a certain thing almost every time. That is not the way it is with political polling, or really any kind of polling. I can do two polls, they'll both have a different result. Having said that, after a certain amount of data comes in, then you can start to say, well, you know, we keep seeing the same information. We keep seeing the same dichotomy. It may not be as intense as what we thought originally, but it's still there. So that's kind of the whole thing. And we're going to talk about all this in relation to the battleground states, and I'll explain that too in podcast 950, the Bob Davis podcast. I know I said at the end of the last podcast, podcast 949, that was 950. I get confused about the numbers, but no, this is actually podcast 950, okay? Well, these days in business, things are a little confusing, right? It's difficult. Businesses, small businesses are having to pivot. Businesses are, you know, having to figure out how to keep their employees. There's all kinds of legal and business financial issues with loans and so forth and so on. So I'm going to recommend an attorney for small business people. And, you know, keep in mind, small businesses can have, you know, scores of employees. This isn't just, we're not talking about one mom and pop shops, although mom and pop also need strategic help from an attorney. I'm going to recommend Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law. They have offices in Cambridge, Minnesota, Edina, Maplewood, Red Wing, Mendota Heights, even in Dallas. Nathan is one of the founders of Virtus Law. So if you're a business owner, let me ask you a question. Are you thinking strategically? Now, you might think one step ahead, and that's important, but the truth is today you have to think strategically to be on top of things, whether it is management service agreements, succession for family-owned businesses, estate planning, partnerships, and of course, asset protection, debt issues, income tax planning, and these government loans. To get through all this, you need a strategic planner, and for that, you need Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law. Let's be honest. Lawyers, you know, they don't always give you strategic advice. Sure, they're going to do what you ask them to do, but if you're the owner of a growing business, given the climate of the current time frame, you got to have somebody that's a little more on the ball, giving you strategic advice, and someone who can be ruthless for you as a client. And that is Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law. So long-term planning, not short-term transaction. That's what Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law and one of the co-founders of Virtus Law does. Full legal services, strategic planners, fees structured reasonably. Call Nathan, who is perfectly willing to talk to people, at Virtus Law, 612-888-1000. That's 612-888-1000. Virtus Law serves small businesses and their owners. Visit them online or click on the Virtus Law banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. That's V-I-R-T-U-S, virtuslaw.com. And speaking of small business and speaking of working from home, which we're all doing, I'm going to just once again talk about Whitetail Builders, Inc., which has been doing a lot of these four-season porches and also making garages into really nice office complexes. So, you know, if you are in a home and you're thinking, boy, I really want to stay here, you know, we could certainly go look for new homes, but they're really high right now. What would happen if I decided to hire a contractor and redo the basement or redo the office into an office complex? I want you to talk to Randy Grabo at Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota. First of all and foremost, Randy has, you know, integrity. So he's going to be with you every step of the way. He's going to make sure that you guys come to an agreement on what you expect and make sure those expectations, those dreams come into reality. 612-282-8801. Randy loves to talk to people about what they want to do. 612-282-8801. Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota, helping you construct your dreams. You're going to love the results. Whitetail Builders at Whitetail Builders, Inc., or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. As I said, assessing what is happening out there is not possible in any accurate way. What you do is you cobble together a bunch of snapshots from different kinds of cameras with different settings and lenses that gives you an idea of the potential outcomes, and you average them, and then you take what you know from political science or from watching elections, and you kind of end up with kind of a souffle. And if it rises, well, then you've done everything right. If it doesn't, well, you throw it out and start over again. But you don't end up with a prediction. You end up with a reliable, if unfocused, picture of the battleground. And let's talk about battleground. These polls are from different polling companies with different approaches and varying degrees of the discipline. When it comes to the people they talk to, the polls per se do not lie. And if you think that, turn the podcast off, because there's no talking to you. This isn't a question of accuracy, but pundits and so-called analysts you see on television, on both sides, commentators that you read, most of the people that you talk to that you think know something are notoriously stupid when it comes to political polling. I'm sorry to be so harsh, but it's true. So I'm going to give you the raw truth, hopefully, the raw reality. In other words, I'm going to give you the raw, unvarnished data, and you can do with it whatever you choose to do. A month since the last polling podcast, late July, early August, this podcast looks at late August. If you want to know what was going on in July, listen to the previous podcast. Now, I just want to say a couple things. More polls are going to come out fairly rapidly. This is August 29th, I think. And I'm at the end of my month for podcasts, so I'm doing this one now. If new ones come out, I'll refer to them in the podcast. I'm not going to go and do a whole thing more than once a month because it's not worth it. Because like in Ohio, they haven't done a poll since August 21st, right? Or Iowa. So when you look at the battleground states, you kind of got to wait for the polls to come in, right? So the media outlets and companies that commission these polls are intensifying their polling schedules as we go forward. So you're going to start seeing more polls in states they weren't polling in early summer. Thus, in late October, you might hear me do more than one of these roundup polls. So be ready, because some new polls in states that weren't polled in early summer or at all are going to start making headlines. And they may be meaningful or not. So if you see a poll coming out of Maine or something that says this is going on, it may be making news because they haven't done any polling in Maine all summer, let's say. Both candidates are striving to reach the magic 270 electoral votes to win the presidency. The focus is on the so-called battleground states, which have constituents from both parties pretty evenly divided. However, those constituencies are seldom spread evenly geographically. Hence, the Democrat center in eastern urban Wisconsin versus Republicans in western rural Wisconsin. And yes, that is a simplification, but you get the idea. Or the western Pennsylvania Republican core versus the urban Democrat core in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. When trends shift, that's when you see potential changes in the outcome. The only place that's going to matter are electoral vote-rich states where the Republican or Democrat can win pluralities enough to shift electoral votes. That's what they call a battleground, the states that are evenly matched. So in any general election, we're talking about electoral votes, and therefore, in any general election, suddenly a state can emerge as a quote-unquote battleground. It's a battleground in Georgia! Well, it's just because it's a close race in Georgia. And again, I mentioned this in one of the previous podcasts, we're talking about pluralities. We're not talking about majorities. So what does that mean? It means that these candidates win by a few hundred, a few thousand votes in some of these states. It's not like California, where you've got a huge Democrat advantage, or even Illinois, where there's a huge Republican Democrat advantage. On the other hand, Indiana or Wyoming, you know, where there's a huge, or Utah, where there's a huge Republican vote. So the battleground states in 2020, which this has been pretty consistent over the last few years, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Texas, and Florida, and increasingly a few other states emerging as battlegrounds, as I said, because the polls show close races. These are states that used to be solid Democrat or Republican that might flip, as the media says, but in truth, they're just places where a Democrat or Republican candidate might just get a plurality of votes, as a few thousand or a few hundred people more vote for a Democrat or Republican candidate to gain that state's electoral votes, which is the heart of the battle. It's all about the Electoral College. And I talked about that in a recent podcast. Don't need to go into depth about that in this podcast. These new battlegrounds include, but are not limited to, Arizona, increasingly Georgia, and according to recent polls, and we'll see if this holds, Minnesota, which is kind of a surprise for people living here in the state of Minnesota. My last podcast talked about political realignment. That is not what we're looking for here. That's not what this is about. This concept of pluralities really apply to what happens after the election with political parties. So if we were actually talking about a political realignment, we would be talking about California flipping to Republicans. We would be talking about Illinois and New York flipping to Republicans. We wouldn't be talking about battleground states. And then with a realignment, all of the battleground states sort of get jumbled and it flips and changes around. That's not what this is. These are just, you know, this is just the standard thing in a presidential election in the United States in the last 10 years or so. These are the battleground states. So in the second half of this podcast, we'll get into the individual state polls. Let's talk about investment. Let's talk about investment properties. So right now, a lot of people are saying what we should do is buy a duplex, rent out the other side, live in the duplex until we get up enough money to buy another duplex, and eventually we will have a fleet of investment properties. How do we do that? Well, I'm going to give you a person that you can call that can help you with that, and she is awesome. Brenda O'Connell on TB Rentals. So she does two things. First of all, she's real good at finding houses and working for tenants. But second of all, she's real good if you're a tenant and you're looking to rent. She can connect you with the kind of landlord or, you know, whatever you want to call it, owner who really cares about their property. And she will work very hard for both sides. So she knows how to find the properties, crunch out the numbers, determine whether value is there, find you a house, find and service tenants, give property owners peace of mind, and, you know, tenants as well. And you've heard Brenda on talking about the state of the real estate markets or what she's up to. And she's very personable and she works really hard, again, for both sides of the equation there, renters versus owners. Online at ontbrentals.com. She's part of the Realty One Choice group. Or you can click on her banner at the top of the page, the BobDavisPodcast.com. It says OnTB Rentals. Got to get a shout in for my friends at Cartridge World because they're awesome. And why? Why? Because why pay more to print is their motto. They live by it 24 hours a day. They've got it painted on the ceiling. They've got it, you know, on cups in their kitchen. Cartridge World, why pay more to print? Because the print cartridges are so expensive at the big box retailers. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. Serving Minnesota from Maple Grove at 763-420-6632. That's 763-420-6632, Cartridge World. Remember that their cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new, free delivery and qualifying orders. They could even get you a printer, and they have great customer service. Cartridge World, click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. So again, I'm looking at more than one poll. I'm looking at averages wherever possible, but then I'm giving you the latest poll information. So it doesn't mean that there's movement in that direction. It means that a recent poll showed dot, dot, dot. So let's start with Michigan. It is a primary battleground state, and all we have heard about is how President Trump has lost it. Actually, I said that because early on it sure looked like that, and it may happen that way. But the average of the last six polls has Biden at 48% and Trump at 44%. That's pretty close to the margin of error. The last poll for this podcast that we concern ourselves in Michigan was August 28th by the Trafalgar Group, which there's some controversy as to how they sample. So I just want to point that out. But the Trafalgar Group poll had 1,048 respondents. This one now shows Trump in the lead for the first time in Michigan, 47-45. Now, is that a lead? Not really. If you have a poll that has a 3-point margin of error, this one had a 2-point margin of error. It's a 1-point lead, or it's a 1-point not lead. It's basically tied 47-45. And the headline here is Michigan is officially tied. Remember, I mentioned the sea of Trump signs that I saw in northern and western Michigan just last week. Like 2016, Trump can still win this state. And I think every time you get into one of these close states where the Democrat leads by 2 points or 1 point, and or the president leads by 1 point or 2 points, you have to say that any outcome is possible. But in particular, with Michigan being always considered a Democrat stronghold, up until 2016, I would have to say that Trump can win. He's got himself into a position here where he could win again in 2020 in Michigan. So there you go. And by the way, this recent poll is an outlier, the Trafalgar poll. Recent polls have shown Biden with a 5 or 6 point lead. But ask yourself what has changed recently, and if that is what's impacting this. Biden announced Kamala Harris as his running mate and tried to close the deal at the DNC convention. Some people think he did. Some people weren't impressed. And this recent poll was taken at the peak of the RNC. So we're going to be watching Michigan closely, whereas before we kind of weren't, right? Pennsylvania is pretty much a must-win for Trump and for Biden. It's one of the selling points for the Biden nomination was that because Biden was from Delaware, which is over there, near there, if not bordering Pennsylvania, he would easily win that state, a state which Trump narrowly and unpredictably won in 2016. I'm going to say it again. We had to wait till like 1 o'clock in the morning to get data on Pennsylvania. And the president is still not polling well in Pennsylvania. Biden most recently polled 49% and Trump 42% in a Franklin and Marshall poll, which has a 5.2% margin of error. That is a 7-point difference on August 27th. I do have to say that Biden and Trump have been somewhat close in Pennsylvania all summer. 3 points here, 5 points there. But Biden has always been in the lead. So I would say that Pennsylvania is going to be an uphill battle for Trump. Doesn't mean that he's not within striking distance to get a plurality, a few hundred votes, a few thousand votes, depending on where they come from. Arizona is one of those new battleground states, places where Republican or Democrat victories seemed cooked into the cake in years past. Arizona, or baked into the cake, Arizona has also been a vexing contest for Republicans on the Senate side as well as with the president. So, a CNBC Change poll on August 26th with only 344 respondents, which is, you know, my view, pretty useless. I'd throw that away, but still, it shows Biden with a 49 and Trump with 47%, which is tied, especially with a poll that small. A Redfield and Wilton poll on August 21st was abysmal for Trump, with Biden at 47 and the president at 38. Now, I discount that one just because it had a very high percentage of quote-unquote others. In other words, people that wouldn't choose one of the two mainline candidates. For the most part, this is a very close race in Arizona. Part of what I think is pulling it down is the Martha McSally and Mark Kelly senatorial race, in which Kelly has maintained a comfortable lead. I don't think these polls show a leader in Arizona, despite what they say. They're a little bit problematic, a little wonky in terms of the results. But again, Arizona's been a reliable Republican state, and a close race there is not good. And it's the Senate race that's really affecting the poll outcomes. And again, this might be one of those states that Trump would take comfortably, and Martha McSally would still lose the Senate race. We just can't tell at this point. If you want to be president of the United States, you gotta have Florida. Gotta have it. This has been a vexing problem for Republicans all summer, what with the COVID and all. Last summer was on August 26th, 1,200 people in the sample, almost 1,300, Biden with 49, Trump with 46, within the margin of error, give or take. So again, that is too close to call. Florida is one of those places where Biden has been in the lead for the entire summer, which is why an average of the last six polls in the Sunshine State show Biden with a 3-point lead, still too close to call on average. But that is what has kicked off a lot of those news stories about Trump and Biden in Florida. North Carolina has not traditionally been a battleground state. No, suddenly it's become one. It has been conservative and recently pretty dependably Republican, like Arizona or Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. So a lead for Biden there is a big deal. Any lead. The fact that the Democrat has been in the lead pretty consistently in the last six polls tells you this is going to be close. And I'm going to say it. It really shouldn't be, but it appears to be. The last poll was on the 26th, Biden with 48, Trump with 46, with the average of the last six polls, Biden at 47 and Trump at 46. Again, you can't call that. And this is where people go, well, these polls are biased. I don't think they're biased. I just think they're showing a very tight race. And there's a whole bunch of factors, and I'll talk about this when we get closer to Election Day. There's a whole bunch of factors with how the polls open, when they open, who goes, what's counted, how many absentee ballots are going to be involved, and everything else. The polls can't anticipate any of that. So this is just one of those states that you can't call. You got to wait for the votes. Even more, it's hard to tell what the outcome in North Carolina will be, but we would basically say to that, this is one we got to watch because it's a close race according to polling. That simple. Right now, Wisconsin is certainly at the heart of the Black Lives Matter law and order debate with the whole Kenosha thing going on. It's also a state Trump won in 2016. Biden has been in the lead there consistently for months, which I think is probably more significant than one or two polls showing Trump with a 1 or 2 point lead. The latest was taken on August 26 with Biden at 49, Trump at 44. Another Trafalgar Group poll on the 25th shows Trump with a 1 point lead to 46 to Biden's 45. Wisconsin has been the scene of many very close down to the wire elections in the last few years. Just trying to get situated here. Western and northern Wisconsin is a sea of Trump signs. I've just been up there, and you see, this is where you see the farmers making their own Trump signs. Madison and Milwaukee are Democrat strongholds. And Kenosha, incidentally, my understanding is pretty Republican, on down to Chicago. Therefore, Wisconsin is one of those states you'll be watching on election night. If they call it for either candidate early, well, that's going to be significant because Wisconsin is probably going to be very close because it has been for the last 8 years. Texas has been getting a lot of publicity because it's supposedly a Republican lock. Here's the thing, and this is what irritates me about these commentators and these pundits. Today's Texas isn't yesterday's Texas. Politically, Texas, despite its socially conservative credentials, like a Texas Democrat is a Minnesota Republican, is not today's Texas. It's more like Ohio in terms of the split politically. Texas has voted for Democrat presidents and governors and Republican presidents and governors and congressmen. There are Democrat congressmen from Texas, lots of them, and it has become home to a lot of transplants from high-tax, high-regulation western coastal states and Midwestern states like Minnesota and Illinois, a lot of them retirees. It's also got a high number of Latino and Black voters who tend to vote Democrat, so like in Houston, parts of Dallas, Austin, and so forth. So you should not just expect Texas to vote for Republicans or Trump, whatever he is, like Utah or Wyoming, because that's not what Texas is politically. The two candidates there have been swinging back and forth between the lead and second in the past few months. Predictably, Biden gets headlines and he gets mentions on all the news shows every time he takes the lead because Texas is this Republican stronghold, right? But then Trump doesn't get headlines when he retakes the lead. So it's just idiocy. The last poll is a public policy poll on August 24th, which shows Biden at 48 and Trump at 47. And that one was 746 people in a state like Texas. So again, that's really within the margin of error. That's tied. Previous polls showed up with an 8-point lead or a 6-point lead for Biden or Trump. But the unvarnished truth is Texas isn't a lock for either candidate or party. I'd say it's going to be tougher, though, for Republicans than in years past. But that doesn't mean they won't pull it out. It doesn't mean they will either. That's really important. But historically, Texas voted for Jimmy Carter in 76. It voted for Humphrey in 68. It voted for Kennedy in 1960, Johnson in 64. Texas's emergence as a Republican state, which it isn't in political terms, is relatively recent. Let's not forget one of the most influential speakers and Johnson's mentor, Sam Rayburn, hailed from the Lone Star State. Now, there hasn't been enough polling in Ohio for my taste. The last one was August 21st, and before that, July 26th. The most recent Ohio poll shows Biden and Trump tied with 47%. Trump at a 3-point lead in late July, and at one point around the same time, he also was in the lead. In late June and early July, Biden was leading in Ohio. Even the averages show a close race in Ohio with both candidates locked at about 47% each. Like Texas, if Trump wants to win, he's got to have Ohio. It's going to be close right up until the end. One of the states not expected or no one expected to be a battleground, and technically we don't even know if it really is, because this is one poll, which is, I think it's a Trafalgar Group poll. The last poll on August 20th showed Trump and Biden tied at 47%. Very unusual for reliably Democrat Minnesota, especially since Biden has had a wide lead in this state since the polling started way back in last fall. The Trafalgar Group poll most recently included 1,400 respondents with a 3% margin of error. So it's, you know, just if you look at the raw sampling, you know, in terms of number, not a bad poll for the state of Minnesota. So take your pick. The problem in Minnesota for Joe is going to be the working class union Democrat stronghold, which is another place that appears to be going for the president. If signs and anecdotal data is an indication, up in northern Minnesota, and it comes down to the mines versus the environmentalists up in the northern part of the state. And the mining part of Minnesota has really been hit hard, and they continue to be hit hard because of legislators arguing about whether to allow Polymet and other mines to get going again. So there's all kinds of issues up there related to this. Also, rural Minnesota has been historically Republican, although that should be qualified. It's a state that has voted for pretty much vanilla moderate candidates, and I mean Republican candidates, all down the line. Given the state's progressive history dating back to the late 1800s, with Republicans, it's kind of vanilla. It's not really a hardcore right-wing versus left-wing state. And don't assume that because of a bunch of Union Democrats who are hardcore guys, that suddenly Minnesota is flipping to the conservative side. They're just pissed off at Democrats for a lot of reasons up there. And they may vote for the president because of it, because he's going to, quote unquote, protect their jobs or whatever he says. The Democrat Center in Minnesota is Minneapolis and St. Paul, parts of St. Cloud to the north of the cities and Rochester to the south. If Trump continues to tie Biden in Minnesota, though, that's news and it's significant. We'll just have to see what the future polls say. If I had to bet, I would say that the next polls are going to show things back to normal again for Minnesota. But, you know, you never know. Georgia is the reverse of Minnesota, always thought of as a reliable Republican state, at least in the present time frame, like going back 20 years, 30 years. The state that produced Speaker Gingrich, another successful congressman and Speaker of the House during the Reagan and Clinton eras, you would think the president would have a comfortable lead in Georgia. But the last polls show Trump with 47 and Biden with 45. They're tied in Georgia. In fact, Biden has been in the lead for the past weeks. So this is a state that is either going to be predictably Republican on election night, or it's going to be really close. Honorable mention includes Iowa, another reasonably dependable Republican state where Trump leads by a point or two or three. Basically, Trump and Biden are tied in Iowa, which is a bit of surprise to me. I'll just observe that, like Minnesota, Iowa tends to have a bit of a progressive bent when it comes to Republicans, although Iowans think Minnesotans are so liberal. One farmer told me, quote, "Even the trees bend to the left up there," pointing up to Minnesota. Nevada has been a little close also, but there hasn't been any polling there since spring. When we get into close regions, we would be looking at House or Senate races, but we're out of time. And the thing that I would say there is, this is why the down-ticket races when it comes to the president are so important. If you have a very strong Senate candidate, Republican or Democrat, then that helps pull votes for your guy. So in close races and in states that are very close, the presidential candidates really want to try to find candidates that are going to be just balls out leaders, in their local races. To sum up, this is not a done deal. Any development can substantially affect the outcome the closer we get, depending on who it benefits. Keep in mind, people are voting now with absentee ballots, and with all the confusion and controversy there, I will say again, if you want your vote to count, put on your mask and go vote in person on November 3rd or when the actual polls open. I don't get into whether the conventions gave the candidates a bump or whether one convention worked better than the other. I don't get into looking at day-to-day stories and trying to determine what effect that's going to have on a campaign. Usually it doesn't. My own bias is these votes, if not all votes, are based on, especially when it comes to presidents, broad themes like equal rights or law and order or security and economics, but also optics and how those optics cause people to feel about candidates. And I will tell you, I see a lot of people saying, oh, did you hear what so-and-so said? Or did you watch the such-and-such speech? I told somebody, forget, if you're going to watch the speech from the Rose Garden with Melania Trump, or you're going to watch the president's 70-minute acceptance speech, turn the sound down and look at the optics, look at the visuals. And, you know, you've heard about all the controversy about using the White House and everything else, which I don't, you know, I'm not going to say anything about that. But you see the value in using the optics rather than being in a basement or, you know, a tiny room or some set. And that was how the Democrats did their convention, and good for them, and it may have been the right thing to do. But again, I think people are looking, they're sizing people up visually, and it's all about how they feel. It isn't necessarily how they think. And people struggle to understand that in politics because they look at these individual things going on. And then it's this whole question about how people feel about different things going on, how they feel about writing or how they feel about Trump, you know, and his tweets and his nastiness, or how they feel about Biden looking old, or how they feel about Kamala Harris, or how they feel about what's going on in their local area or in the nation as a whole. And I, you know, you can't poll that. You can do complex polls like Pew does about how people feel on 1 to 10. You can do all that stuff. You can really, the most effective thing there is to get back to the complex analysis, the analytics stuff. Yeah, you can pull aggregate data from social media and from the stuff that they mine off of your phone, and you can subject that data to all kinds of analysis. That'll tell you more about how people feel than it does than what the polling shows. The polling is actually just the last step in the process where you get down to who you're going to vote for. But it doesn't tell you how people arrived at that decision, doesn't tell you why that decision might change, doesn't tell you why one set of polls shows one thing and another set of polls might show another thing, or why the poll numbers change month to month or week to week, and why the trends change month to month or week to week, because you can't know those things. So when I get into these things about, you know, this kid in Kenosha being arrested, or the protests, or, you know, the whole police brutality question, when I get into that stuff, it can have an effect or no effect. It just depends on how people feel about candidates. Things, they keep talking about how terrible things are. And this is not an editorial judgment. This is an observation. They keep talking about how terrible things are, and it's all Trump's fault, and it's all happening on his watch. Biden said yesterday he's complaining about all the things that happened under his watch. But the question is whether people are going to feel like the Democrats are, you know, Debbie Downers, and the Republicans are positive that things are going to get better, and whether they're going to vote and say, I'd rather feel better about the country than worse. I don't know. Those are the kinds of questions that only the voters can answer on Election Day. Real glad to have the independently owned and operated community-focused refueling station at 36th and Lindale Avenue, 36 Lynn, as a supporter of the Bob Davis podcasts. They're in the Lynn Lake neighborhood in Minneapolis. Not only are those guys at 36th and Lynn out to help the community, and they do, they also have a great selection of locally sourced products in the store and great coffee as well. Remember, 36th Lynn, next time you swing through Minneapolis and need some gas or a cup of coffee, you can always get a better deal because it's an independent refueling station. For more info and great 36 Lynn events, check them out online at 36lyn.com or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Don't forget DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit DepoStar at DepoStar.com. Thanks for the support, you guys. So, just real quick, at the end of this podcast, I want to remind everybody to sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter by going to thebobdavispodcast.com, sliding to the right, and looking for the Bob Line newsletter. Sign up, you enter your email, and then you enter your name, and you hit sign up, and you're going to get an email that says, did you really want to sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter? Click yes, and you're in. And that's a spam filter for you and for us. Really appreciate that. Also, appreciate shares on social media, not comments so much. You can get the podcast at Spotify. I always recommend Spotify for Android devices because it seems to work flawlessly. But of course, you can subscribe at iTunes or right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. So, that's the polling information for now. We'll come back, and you know, if they start putting out new polls consistently, then I'll do these a little bit more per month as we get closer and closer to the election. Thanks for listening to Podcast 950. This is a beautiful day, and I'm just going to get out in it.
Bye-bye. If you'll turn the machine on. Are we getting through? Is anything happening? I mean, will they? Will you turn the right knobs? I mean, we're on the air. Is that good? We're getting there. Oh, fine. Good. Any minute now.
I take two.